Morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga and my co-host. I'm going to have to change this because Pat's on quite a bit. My co-host, Pat Kane. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Rick. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I wanted to just let people know that we're doing our podcast from our internet radio station.
High above Saratoga Springs.
High above Saratoga Springs on the 19th floor of the Saratoga Broadcasting Building. Skidmore lost its power. They're out of power. So we're doing a great show here. Podcast will be up on SaratogaBroadcasting.com under the Talk Saratoga page. Mm-hmm. So I want to welcome our guest this morning, Dylan Moran, who is the candidate for Public Works, Commissioner of Public Works. Morning, Dylan.
Morning, guys.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
All right. Well, Dylan, what we always like to do here on the show is to have our guest give a little bit of history, a little bit of background on themselves. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Well, first off, this is the second time I've been here, so I really appreciate the opportunity to have the chance to talk. Not necessarily I've gotten a lot of media play this cycle, so appreciate you guys at least paying attention to the message that I'm delivering.
Hey, we enjoy it.
Yeah, so I'm a local Saratogian. I'm born and raised here. I think I have a very common experience for most of the citizens in this community, in as much as that I don't come from a lot of money. I grew up here. I'm fortunate to have had a really good life, but I know a lot of folks that haven't had the same fortune that I do. I know where we came from. I know who we are now. And I see the nature of our community changing, both from a demographic and I think in a lot of ways, sometimes an empathy standpoint. And a lot of what I'm stepping forward for is to become a citizen on the council. We don't have that type of representation, I think, in a consistent way. And I intend to be that voice, that check and balance, if you will, mm-hmm. for the issues and for the concerns for the citizen, okay. Period.
Why don't you give us a little bit a background about your education and work history?
Sure. I'm a chemical engineer by degree. I've been working in the field of water for over 25 years, and some folks have asked me what that means. I like challenges. I like solving problems. And to continue, let's just say, in a the same sort of channel that you might be in, you see a certain type of situation or whatever. I like, and I've had the opportunity to go through a diversity of situations. So I've been spent a lot of time in municipal water disinfection, which is incredibly important as it relates to some issues that we're having in Saratoga Springs. I've done municipal and industrial wastewater. I've done industrial treatment as well from the standpoint of disinfection of water and understanding the balance that you need to have in terms of understanding the nature of the water you're treating and how you're treating it. I've experience and expertise actually that's recognized within the state of New York for the essay and the treatment and the essentially trying to fight off issues like Legionella as it relates mm-hmm. to human health and things like that. So these issues go from one side of water to the other. I've touched it all. I understand it. It's a complex subject. And to have someone in a role where you really are responsible for the health of the public as it relates to water that has no understanding whatsoever of the topic, it's been bothering me for a very, very, very long time. And I know both you gentlemen are very interested in the change of our form of government. Unfortunately, I don't think, and I'm not going to trust that will happen in a time frame that's now acceptable to me. And so what I've done and why I'm stepping forward, one of the big weaknesses in our form of government is that we have somebody like Skip Scirocco in charge of our public health as it relates to drinking water. And he is now clearly going overtly and saying, I'm going to do the bare minimum, and if you need something different, it's on you to take care of it.
I was shocked when I heard that.
Yeah.
I watched that debate. I was there. And when Skip basically said, if you don't like it, tough. I'm not going to improve it. If you want a filter, go get yourself a filter. And what does that do for the average homeowner? Now I've got to filter my water in my own home. It'd be one thing if you're on a private well, you got to do that because that's the way it works. But we pay dearly for city services. And to be told by the person who's responsible, as you said, for health, to say, tough luck, Charlie. Go get your own filter if you don't like it.
You're passing along your responsibility. I mean, it's just that simple. It's I'm going to do the bare minimum. If you don't like what I'm doing, it's on you to change it.
Well, I just want to bring up a subject here because water is going to take on a couple topics here. But I want to we're talking about the chlorination of our water and the chemicals in our water that Skip said he's not going to do anything about. There was a girl, Meg Sorrell, or Mel Sorrell, and I just want to read this little blurb that she put up. I wish I could vote for Dylan Moran in this election, but I don't live in the city anymore. But I do own a hair salon on East Avenue. The water has a major effect on people's hair, too. Some of my clients that live in the city have had damaging effects to their hair from the water. I will turn our sinks on, and the smell of chlorine is overwhelming. And the sewer system down off East Avenue smells really bad. Something needs to change. So this is a person that lived in Saratoga. I think they live in Wilton now, but she has a business for a long time.
A lot of people who own businesses in Saratoga, they can't afford to live in our city.
So. Exactly.
Separate issue, but someone who contributes to our bottom line, to the collection of one of the main revenue sources we have, which is sales tax. So absolutely, businesses matter. We have a ton of the main businesses that we have in our city are all so intimately tied to water, they can't exist without it.
Right. Sure. But what I was, the point she was making is that the water damages, in her profession, she deals with hairstyles, cutting hair, that it damages her customers' hair.
I believe it.
So,
I'll tell you one of this more scarier thing. I went over for dinner to a neighbor's house, and their glasses were all milky. And, you know, they were normal clear glass, but they were milky now because of the water. And I said and you see that in areas where hardness is. And that's, yeah, we don't have it because we have a water treatment thing. So I said, to my neighbor when they said, well, it's no big deal. I said, okay, so the water is staining your glasses, staining them to a point where you can't see through them anymore. It's this milky, almost looks like you haven't washed your glass in quite some time. Imagine what it's doing to your stomach.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you, I started losing my hair after Skip Scirocco in office.
Yeah.
I am. I'm losing my hair.
Same
and
here.
I take a shower every day, and I think...
So it's not male pattern baldness.
Well, you had a start. No, I mean... So, Dylan...
I don't think calcium or magnesium in our water contributes to that, guys. I think you got to blame your father.
Well...
your mother's father, I believe.
One of the other topics off of water, and then, Pat, I know you've got some questions, too, is the... topic of the hookup fees for water from developers. We used to have that in place. Skip Scirocco had a public hearing one night at the council, then took a vote on eliminating that instead of letting people discuss it. What's your feelings on the water hookup fees?
Well, first, I think Skip had a lot of private meetings about the water hookup fees. There are a number of people who weren't getting Skip's assistance, but there are a couple who were, and that was a lot of the problem. So there's a false narrative that's out there about connection fees. First off, I just want the listeners to understand, a water connection fee is simply a funding mechanism. It's widely used. It's legal. It's completely appropriate. It's used throughout the state, and these fees will vary from a small rural community that just charges you for the equipment and the time to connect to their water system, or you're a community like Saratoga Springs, which is highly desirable, where people make a lot more money for building the same exact structure that they could in other communities, but because of the cachet of being in Saratoga Springs, they make a lot more money for building that structure here. And connecting yourself to the water system in Saratoga Springs brings value. If you don't ever connect your structure to water, first off, it's not habitable, so it has zero value. So if you were, for instance, if we built just this, just let's call it object A or structure A, and we built it and we put it in Clifton Park, for instance, they have a connection fee. They get the water from the Hudson River. That's not an issue, you know, here or there. We have our own water system. But they recognize the fact that there's value. So you sell that structure, that home, for $650,000, let's say, in Clifton Park. You build that in Saratoga Springs. Before it's connected to water, it's worth nothing. You can't live there. You can't sell it. You literally can't sell it. As soon as you connect it to the water in Saratoga Springs, we can talk about the quality later, but that same structure is worth $1 million. Mm-hmm. Costs the same amount of money to build, and yet we don't charge them to connect to our water system. We don't ask for a representative or reciprocal value in terms of the pressure they put on our system by being another part of it. It's insane. Yeah. It's absolutely insane. I'm not against development by any stretch. I've personally benefited from it, and most Saratogians have personally benefited it. From at least an ancillary standpoint, that their property values have increased. We have sales taxes associated with people who are living in these places, and the developers themselves are only existing as businessmen in within the environment that we create for them to exist in. So it's appropriate, it's fair, and quite honestly, it's a bit of, there's no other way to describe it, it's welfare. It's over $4 million. We tried to foil the number of connections that have happened since the fee was waived and the fee was put on us as citizens, well over $4 million. The city has not responded to our foil in a way that gives us the ability to get the information that we wanted to have to properly communicate the loss of revenue that we've had because of Skip Scirocco. Mm-hmm. And again, Skip's happy to say that it's a much, much, much better program to put the costs of development
on the rest of the taxpayers.
On the rest of the taxpayers.
Yeah, I'm happy to, you know, to see that.
The very Republican point right there.
The challenge that I find that to be, you know, to be, they were averaging before that $1.2 million in connection fees per year, and now it's been out for 6 years. Is it? They've stopped that for 6-7 years ago. So you're probably looking at $8 million of lost revenue. And a friend of mine is a builder in Saratoga Springs, and I asked, is there a connection fee? He goes, everywhere else I build, Glens Falls, there's a connection fee, Queensbury, there's a connection fee, Clifton Park, there's a connection fee. And I find what they have said, not only Madigan but Scirocco, to talk about, I think it's highly unethical what they've done and how they fabricated it, that they've done it. But they've passed that burden, tax burden, onto the taxpayer that's already paying for what they've got. Now we're paying more in fees than the sum of all the parts. So $1.2 million a year lost because of non-connection fees. And some years it was more than that.
And again, when I say $4 million, that was kind of a mental catalog of the projects that I was aware of. Yeah. But for the listeners, a perfect example would be, let's take out the notion that maybe there's incentives for the income level that they're trying to hit with this apartment complex. But just showing you something of that size is about 300 units. That would be over $600,000 that would be coming into the city because those units are putting pressure on our water system. And this is the thing that's really troubling to me. I have friends that are and acquaintances that are on our land use boards. Specific to the planning board, these guys make decisions on broad developments, like a lot of people or big buildings, how they fit into our community. It's a very, very, very important evaluative step. But I've been told that if literally the worst project in the world was submitted to them, the best they could do is delay it. They don't have the tools to defend our community the way they should. So we need to really look at both the term and the nature of service to these boards. And second, we need to give them the tools. And what I mean is this. So we're at about, and we don't know exactly what or how much water we can produce because we haven't done a safe yield test since I was in high school. It's over 30 years ago. It's weird to say that, but it's unexcusable that we don't know and understand the nature of our water source. But it's essentially assumed that we can make about 10 million gallons a day if needed. In the middle of August, we make have had surge capacity, meaning the most water we've had to produce in a given day is 8.5 million gallons a day. That's 85% of our capacity. And the people who are making decisions on adding broad-based development to our city aren't even given that information. They would definitely like to understand if we've got 15% of our water left, what we're approving and what we're not approving. It would be a tool for them to certainly start to, okay.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example, and Rick likes to talk about this too. They're building a 59-unit building or 59-unit living thing on
$120,000.
$120,000, what?
That's how much taxes or how much in connection fees we're not getting
from that particular project.
Correct.
But more importantly, the infrastructure for that project, I know the owner, and he said, I can't pump one toilet down Broadway because it's so full and clogged.
With grease.
In front of the Adelphi and the grease and so forth. Mm-hmm. But none of that's looked at. We just like, yeah, sure, build it. You know, whatever, no big deal.
As soon as they started building the building next to Druthers, our toilet stopped working.
That's the building I'm talking about. Yeah. So they actually went in and basically vacated that line and ran around it. But that's the bad planning. That's the poor infrastructure. That's the stuff that helps everybody when the applicant is then given a bill for that kind of thing. And it's same
appropriate.
Year, I had two water hookup fees, residential water hookup fees. Right? And
where you live?
Yeah.
Your house has been there for like 150 years.
Well, it was bringing in new water lines, and so I had to pay the $3,000 per.
That's ridiculous.
Per facility. So
it's absolutely ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And as I said, it's the water is the big deal. It really isn't just drinking water; it's the public safety. We get to the situation where, you know, fire. We saw that happen on Woodlawn a few years ago, where they had to go four or five blocks to get running water to put out a fire, and that's problematic for all of us. I also wanted to ask you a quick question.
Well, you're talking about fire and flow, and anybody who's familiar with what happened on Woodlawn I think it's 6 years ago or 6 or 7 years ago at this point in time, it's one of my biggest concerns. So we don't have a infrastructure investment program at all, period. Skip Scirocco is claiming $10 million of quote-unquote investment, but all the projects that fit into that $10 million came under the order of consent decree. And what that means is the state of New York got involved and said, hey, Skip, you're not doing your job. Do your job. Now, if the state's getting involved to tell you to do your job as a steward of our infrastructure, as a protector of our public health as it relates to drinking water, because we know the state, you guys are both Republicans, we know the state's really agile. It's not. It's sarcasm. A lot of people don't get that with me. I like to crack jokes. If the state has to get involved to tell you to do your job, you're not doing your job, period.
Oh yeah. In fact, it's funny. I was at the debate and I listened to Skip say that he actually started blaming some things on the McTighes. Last I checked, McTighes have been out of office for well over 10 years. How do you run we'll call it a business called DPW and still blame the problems on the predecessor? And then more importantly, take credit for all the things that probably didn't get done because of him. But I'd like to shift gears, as I said, safety and fire and so forth. And I looked at it. I've been really on a personal campaign because there's a bar called the Horseshoe Tavern. It's out on just on the backside of the track. So if you read the planning board notes, there is when you go through the planning board process, there's a negotiations for infrastructure or trees or handicapped sidewalks and so forth. And the planning board has the authority and sets the terms based on the approval of what the applicant is supposed to do. Well, I noticed something going on, at least now a couple of years ago, And the if you go back in the records and look at the planning board's final judgment on that, it calls for the horseshoe to pay for sidewalks and trees and lights and curbing and so forth.
Safety improvements.
Guess who did the work?
Well, I know who did the work.
The city did the work.
They didn't even do all the work. Right. So that was required.
So now, so they talk about Skip's response was, you can't plant trees under power lines. Skip, you're not doing your job, buddy, because you can. And there's a long list right here, through the tree program that he does not oversee. There's lots of trees that don't grow above the 20-foot mark, and those are the ones that people in other cities apparently are using. Same thing with the streetlights that were required.
The Sternbergers.
Yeah. Well, we don't do those anymore. They have a lot of problems.
Oh, well.
But we're putting them all over the city. There's over 1,000 of them, and just on the east side.
Well, there's one in a residential neighborhood, and I'd like to talk about that. It's interesting you bring it up. First, we were just talking about the planning board, and if there are bad projects, they do have the ability to put requirements on. And so I think what you're talking about with the horseshoe is, again, like any other local business, they should be able to make money. It's their busy season. They have a tremendous amount of folks that come to their place, and I think it's great. It's part of the experience of Saratoga. Sure. But we want them, their customers and the people that visit our community, to be safe, And so what the planning board did as a conditional part of their permit that allows them to operate the way they do in a residential neighborhood, they said, hey, we want you to do certain improvements to the area. I think it's completely appropriate for them to ask to do that. It was crossing walks. It was human level lighting and not like what's called a cobra light, but what we're all familiar with, which gives us down lighting on a road. We have people that are walking along the sidewalk, and let's be honest, people are partying when they go to the track. So we want to make sure that you can see human beings, that people don't get run over. So it's a common, concern, and it was a very appropriate choice for the planning board to say, if you want your special use permit, you have to make these improvements. So I think what you're referring to, though, is Skip Scirocco, after their lawyer agreed to...
Who's their lawyer, by the way?
I'm not sure who
Matt Jones is the attorney for the horseshoe.
Oh, okay.
Matt Jones also gave, I think, aren't they only allowed to give $1,000?
Matt Jones has exceeded the donation limit for this election cycle with my opponent. And, I mean, that's who I'm concerned with, yep. And that's who I focused on. But he's given a lot of money
to
a lot of
people. It's
pay to
play, man. It's pay to play. I mean, when you look at it, has told the planning board, Skip Scirocco has told the planning board, I'm in charge here. I will take care of the work. I'll determine, regardless of what your determination was on their special use permit, he's like, my buddy Matt Jones has already told me he don't want to do it. He saved them probably $4,000 or $5,000 worth
more
of work.
More than that, Sternberger, the light that they were required to put in, which is those, so everybody understands, it's those sort of torch appearance. It looks like an old gas light. Those are expensive. They're about $3,500, I think, for someone to put in.
Yeah.
And it was required, a couple of them.
Yeah.
They haven't put in. But what Pat's referring to is the fact that their lawyer came and complained to Skip and said, after they accepted the terms of their special use permit, they came in and said, we're not doing it. And Skip said, okay.
Going back to the planning board.
I'll just do it with taxpayer money for you. So. Yeah. He's picking winners and losers.
The ironic part about that time, Dylan, my entire neighborhood, 875 linear feet of granite was installed in our at our cost. I paid for mine. My neighbors paid for theirs. And at that same time, he's doing all free work for the horseshoe, at taxpayer expense, and he's charging the individual taxpayer, you want granite, so we're going to put
$35. I've got a worse story.
Yeah.
I've got an absolute worse story, so... Listen, I've knocked on more doors and I've talked to more of our citizens than any other candidate this cycle. I know this. I'm confident of that statement that I make. I don't put things out there that I'm not knowledgeable about, that I'm not cognizant of, that I know are not accurate. So I want everyone to understand when I'm speaking something, I'm not saying things to aggrandize myself. I'm saying because I know they're to be true.
Sure.
And so this planning board or having contingencies put upon you as you're developing is a common thing.
Sure it is.
And so as I was out in my general neighborhood on the east side knocking on doors the other day, myself and one of my supporters, and we came upon a family that, you know, they developed one of the few available lots left. And if any of you know, as you're going up East Ave on the hill, they're the house that's up on top of the hill.
Just by there this morning.
Okay, guess what? So when they developed their house, they were required to put a walkway in that connects to grass on their neighbor's lot that does not have a walkway, which it's confusing that it doesn't have a walkway to begin with.
Sure.
So they put their walkway in, and you know, that's normal that, you know, hey, we need to infill our walkways, and if you're going to develop a piece of property, that's a sort of a contingency. But they were required to put in one of these $3,500 lights. It's the only one on all of East Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
It's just there. It's just this one light. Yeah. It cost this family all this money, okay? Mm-hmm. And when I told them the story about the horseshoe, they couldn't believe it. Oh, first off, I was like, when we were walking up to the door, I pointed out, hey, I bet they were forced to put that light in. Yeah. And they had to do a number of other things that, as a business, if you have extra money and clearly influence, you can go ahead and get what you want. But if you're a citizen and a basic general person, as one of our current commissioners said, you can get to the end of the line.
I just want to backtrack a little bit before we go on, because I want to understand all this myself, because over the past years, you haven't been able to get a straight
answer. And your clock's
not
moving over there, by the way.
It doesn't matter. We're not bound by time here. The infrastructure. I had, when Klotz was finance commissioner, he spoke before our Kiwanis Club. And I said to him.
Did you say Ken Klotz, so before he was mayor?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was finance commissioner. And we were talking, and they had built a new development. I live on Grand Avenue, and they were building in a new development. And I said to him, don't all these hookup fees put a stress on our infrastructure?
The fees don't, but the hookups themselves do.
Right. And I said, "Why is there managed growth?" Now, this is back in the 80s, okay? Yep. Is there a plan for managed growth in Saratoga? And he said, no, not really. And now you can see the reason why, the fruition of this, because all the incumbents.
You can see the result. You can't see the reason why.
Right. Well, no, you can see the reason why, and I'll tell you why.
You're more cynical than I am.
Because this year's elections, and it's been going on for years, but this year it's magnified because of the amounts of money.
Ugh.
The incumbents right now have been given tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars. And when you go down the list of their donors, they're all, not all, but most of them are builders, contractors, unions. And by unions, I mean plumbers' unions, electrical unions. Who are these candidates going to give their oomph to? Not the citizens, but to the developers. Why did they eliminate the water hookup fee when he forgave, and this is Commissioner Scirocco, forgave over $1 million to one of the biggest builders in Saratoga? This is disgusting, these donations. In my opinion, it mirrors the Board of Election donations that went on in this past election cycle for the board, school board, I meant. And it's terrible how much money these people are taking in from outside sources that have to do business with the city. And who are these incumbents going to do business with?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So when I started to essentially go through the decision-making process of running for office, one of the biggest concerns that I had is money. And what I mean by that is simply this. The involvement of money in our political process is corrupting or corruptive. I'm not putting any judgment on anybody who's in the political process, but just the existence of money and the process of having to ask people for money is corruptive. And why I say that is, there's a statistic, I think it's more now, but if you're a congressman, for instance, and you get elected to office, you have to raise about $30,000 a day while you're in office to be able to run again. So when are you going to do the people's business?
Right.
So for me, I was, my intent was originally to just run on my own money because it's a personal issue for me. It's offensive, but we do exist in the system that we are, and or that we have rather, and that people want to make small donations. You know, I have taken small donations, and it's because of this. Simply, if people believe in what I'm talking about and they want to connect with me and they understand the system that we have, well, I want to give them that opportunity. But I haven't taken a single dollar from a developer or any of these concentrated corporate interests. And it's because of this. When I win and I'm in charge of this department that they have to interact with, they should not have to give money to feel like they can talk to me. Mm-hmm. They should not have to give money to do their business. Developers are not evil. They're our neighbors.
Oh yeah.
They're one of our, quite honestly, right now, other than the restaurant industry, I would guess that they're as an industry, our biggest employer locally. Good sure paying does. Jobs. They are our neighbors. They are creating a lot of the wealth that we're all sharing in terms of the betterment. We as citizens, though, it's entirely appropriate that we set the conditions in the environment that they operate in as business people. And so when you talk about growth, I do think it's appropriate, especially right now, that our community starts to have a conversation about how big do we want to be? How big should we be? And if we are growing, what are we gaining as a community from that growth process? Because right now we're gaining nothing.
Well, one of the, and I know you're getting in here, Pat, but I just want to, my own view of the mega donations.
It's disgusting to me.
It absolutely is. But what we absolutely saw, I was trying, and I brought the school board in because they raised a huge amount of money
for jobs that pay nothing.
Right, for three candidates. But only one of them won because the other two had a strong message. So you have a strong message that can people can take and understand. So your opponent, by raising all this money and the other council members, their opponents this year have a very strong message to give to the citizens of Saratoga. And sometimes that can overwhelm big money.
Boy, I hope so.
And it can. I'll tell you, you'd look at the school board election, and I raised heck about that, too. You shouldn't have to spend $40,000 to get elected to a school board.
Well, you shouldn't position. Spend, quite honestly, as a special interest group, you should not spend or be allowed to spend $40,000 on an election, ostensibly with people who just want to serve their right. local community for unpaid positions. I just thought that whole thing was untoward. I thought that the tenor and the nature and the conversation that was introduced to Saratoga politics during that was reprehensible. And now, unfortunately, it's continued into this election, both the heavy money and also just the
special interest,
non-issue-based personal attacks and destruction of human beings. Mm-hmm. It's, listen,
but your message is strong.
It is, and it's consistent.
And we've seen that can overcome money. So,
no, and I go right up to City Hall. I mean, they're spending $60,000, $70,000 this year for a job that pays $14,500. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the propaganda board. Director that they have in City Hall that they're paying we're paying $70,000 for.
There's a lot of employees inside City Hall that do a wonderful job, but then there's some strategically placed employees that are basically do the bidding of the elected officials to, basically, and I wouldn't say line their pockets. That's not something I can prove, but it certainly is kind of funny where there's a lot of press releases now right during election season of good things that are happening in City Hall, even though they're really, as far as I'm concerned, I don't believe it until I see it.
Well, there was one press release related to connection fees that I completely disagree with because they say they're illegal and they say they're unconstitutional. And I just want to reaffirm what I was speaking about earlier. Connection fees are completely appropriate. They're just, they're fair. The comptroller himself, in his most recent report on infrastructure, because infrastructure is a big deal. This is happening. You can pay me now or you can pay me later. And the bills come and due, and I think that we should get after it. But where I'm coming from is that our city officials are using the city website to tell our citizens that collecting of money from people who are developing our community is unconstitutional and not legal. And that's just a fallacy. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous in its premise, and it's offensive in the execution of what they're doing. They're using our money to lie to us.
And the labor, you know, kind of going back to that thing I mentioned earlier, you know, my entire street was putting in granite, all right? So the deal, this is how a deal is structured.
My curb is below the street level, by the way, so.
You need some curbing. But the idea is, you know, using city services to get what is, you know, an electable selection, which is granite or concrete, whichever. So I paid the linear feet price of granite, which is $35 a linear foot. I paid no labor bill. The guys were on our street for well over a week. Six men, well over a week, taking out the old stuff, putting the new stuff, cutting this and that. So I don't know what the rate per hour for labor would be, but the rest of the taxpayers paid our labor to put our curbing in.
Correct. Well, there's this thing called the prevailing wage. Yeah. So if the work is done by, for me, and in my opinion, I grew up in a union family. Mother and father were both in unions. It facilitated my early life. We weren't wealthy by any stretch. I lived in an apartment until I was 12 years old. But unions are incredibly important for our middle class. And the concept of prevailing wage essentially says when you have a public project, we are putting our tax dollars in. It's appropriate and it's expected that we pay a wage that supports the lifestyle and the workers that sure. we're involving our tax dollars in. So the fact that we're not charging anything is a little astonishing to me. But what's worse is that we have the guy that I'm running against who's in charge of unions, who's been supported by unions, but as soon as once we got on the debate stage, the guy starts mocking and talking about how prevailing wage is a negative impact on our society and on our community. And I know you guys are Republicans, but I do not agree with that concept in any way, shape, or form. My life would not be where it is now without the benefits of what unions bring to our men and women who are in our general workforce. I am standing here today, sitting in front of you right now. Having the ability through the wealth I've accumulated as an individual worker, and the opportunities I've had because of education, because of unions, because of collective bargaining, and they're eroding our middle class across the country, sure. And we can't affect public policy across the United States as a city of Saratoga Springs, but I can be damn sure to make sure that when we're spending our taxpayer dollars, it's staying in our community. It's paying a wage that is representative of the value of the work that we get.
Yeah.
And it's an incredibly important issue for unions now, because it used to be when I was growing up, union workers were about 33% of our economy, and now it's like 12% or something like that. And the only people who are left are educators and some other folks. And quite honestly, unions and union trades, they work safer. They have better education in terms of the way that they work when they're on the job. And it's entirely appropriate that the prevailing wage is paid, because it forces other people to have those same standards for safety of their workers.
Hey, I want to shift gears on you real fast. Ahead. I came across some staggering statistics, the term called unaccounted water. What in God's name is that all about?
That's a great question.
Can you give me some details?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm a registered Republican, so I don't always think like a Republican, because a lot of my friends are Democrats. But I look at this issue and saying a lost water from a Democratic perspective is shameful, because we're...
Isn't that Jobs? What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm just being a wise guy.
But. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. But the idea is lost water and or and or lost revenue. But in this case, it's both.
Well, it's absolutely both, Pat. It's a great point. And again, I kid. I've been knocking on Democratic doors, unaffiliated doors, Republican doors this entire time because the issues that I care about are water. The issues that I care about are appropriate responses and quality of the services that we have. And that's not our workers. It's our management. It's how we go about doing the work that we do. But getting on to your specific question, water. So every year there is a water quality report that's issued. It's a requirement of the Department of Health. It's signed by the commissioner. I'll start signing that next year.
And that's on the website, right? City's website.
Right now you've got 2014 through 2019 on the city website. I would love all you guys to go look at it right now. And I'm just going to say one thing, 9,680. Find that number.
I found it last night.
I read
all those reports from everything that was on the on the website.
I explained to you.
Tell me what it is. I just don't understand it.
So as a part of the report, you know, there's quarterly testing that goes on. There's an annual report that you have to furnish to the citizens and the receptors of the water that you're providing. And in this, again, you're communicating how much water we made, how many customers we have. This is the quality of water that we put out. It's a requirement of the Department of Health, not because it's a box you have to check, but because it's an issue of the human health and our responsibility as a government to be accountable to our citizens. So I take this stuff very, very, very seriously. And the reason I say 9,680 is because if you go to the 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2019 reports, that's the amount of customers that we have.
Why can that be the same number all those years? That's a part of, I kept looking at that number saying, I've seen houses built. I've seen hotels built. How can we have the same number 5-6 years in a row?
I'll be kind and say that our current commissioner is lazy.
I'll use a nicer word, BS.
Well, I would just say it's an official state report and that number is wrong. If you expect anyone to believe that we have the same amount of customers today in 2019 that we did in 2014, it's you're asking people to, like, you know, pigs will fly.
How can you trust a guy that 5 years in a row puts the same number down and first, number one, expects us to believe that, number one. But number two, how about all the other things that he's talking about?
I don't trust him. I don't trust any numbers in that report because if you're going to falsify one line. But let's get back to the question. So on that report, it tells us how much water we make. And then in other reports that are available, it tells us how much we're billing. So I think you and I, you're hitting on that. So basically, so the listener or the listeners understand, as a water system, you make so much water, you bill. Those costs are intended and they're actually directed to operate the plant, the personnel, and the infrastructure to support that process. So we're making X amount of water, average probably around 2.75 to 3 million gallons a day. When you multiply that by 365, we start to get into the billions and trillions of gallons of water.
Unbelievable.
So when you look at how much we collect in revenue, or if you look down to the granular data, which says how many gallons we've billed for versus how many gallons we've produced, we bill for between 30 and 40%, depending on the year, less than we produce. Meaning,
oh my God,
we only collect about 70% of the revenue associated with the water that we produce. Now, I keep hearing these, well, it's because we don't meter the water into buildings. Really? We have 40 buildings or 35 buildings as a city? We use...
Yeah, it can't be true.
We have 9,680 customers. So if there's 30 buildings that are city used, 1/3 of the water is being consumed by like an eighth of a percent of.
I mean, think about the gallons. If you're an environmentalist, you're saying we're pumping millions of gallons into the floor.
I asked two simple questions: where's it going, and what's happening to it? Yeah. So there's obviously we have an infrastructure that's failing. We fix it when it breaks. We're not being proactive. We have to change that. So One of the possible reasons is, well, it's just leaking into the ground. So we're putting treated water with chemistry in it, and among other things, fluoride, chlorine, some things that, again, we're not going to treat with fluoride after I get in there. It's wrong.
But question for you.
Where's it going? If it's either going in the ground, right, or somebody's getting it and they're not paying for it.
Yep.
Those are the only two possible things.
Imagine if as you become DPW commissioner and we start writing you a check for your department, $750,000 a year. What could you do with $750,000 a year when talking about replacing infrastructure?
Well, if you listen to Skip Scirocco, not a lot, because you have to pay the prevailing wage and you really don't get a lot of value.
Yeah, but
still,
imagine over the last 10 years, I can tell you $750,000 a reasonable amount of money to attribute to unaccounted water?
Well, that's about the way you would equate it on the basis of what we charge for water, yeah, and then how much we're losing.
So if we're losing $750,000 a year for DPW, and we're just doing nothing about it, trying to figure out where our leaks are, who's getting.
We're not trying to find out where our leaks are.
No, it's just this is.
They're not doing anything.
$750,000 just in the last 10 years. That's $7.5 million that Skip Scirocco has not paid attention to. And quite frankly, neither is Michelle Madigan. She's our internal auditor who should be saying, hey, Skip, we got this issue here that we're losing a lot. It's in print in the reports, in print. And yet nobody's doing anything about it.
I'm very concerned for the collection of fees associated with water, and only in as much as this. I know all the citizens are paying for it. I know that they get their bill every quarter. I know there's a fee on that bill associated with the pressures of development and the need to invest in infrastructure. And when there's 9,680 customers from 2014 till now, I'm curious how many of those invisible customers that have come in our community since 2014 are paying.
And he's giving it away. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
Shocking, though.
But there is no accountability. And again, you know, coming forward and being a part of this election cycle reflects this, and I want to make sure people understand this. Our former government has put us in a position, or puts people in a position, to manage departments maybe they don't already have the knowledge or ability to do. And a great example will be Chris Mathiesen. Chris, great guy, well known in our community. He's looked at as a leader. He has a very authoritative voice on issues like zoning. And it's appropriate that someone like him would be involved as a legislative voice in our community. But, you know, he's a dentist, well-educated, again, goes to what I was saying before. But what does he know about firemen and policemen? And why should his advocacy and his knowledge of our community also put him in a position to have to manage that department? It doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to change, so at least for the foreseeable future. So I'm stepping forward to be the first person in my lifetime to go for this position, to have the understanding, the knowledge, right, the intellectual curiosity, the desire to get deeper into these issues that you're bringing up, to care and understand about the issues that they relate to public health. I am the right person for this job. We need more people like me to do this job.
Absolutely.
You know, this position...
it's still takes, not 840.
No. This position deals with more than water, although water is a very important part of the department. What other things, road maintenance, city owns a lot of property. Give us some feedback on what you're going to do in that area.
I appreciate you asking that question, Rick, because, you know, as I said, I've knocked on thousands of doors. I've talked with a lot of citizens, again, in the thousands, and I've been consistent with my message. And what it is, I have a commitment to transparency and showing folks what we're going to do, but also I have the responsibility to sustainably put forward a plan and a future for this department. And sustainability, it's a term that's used a lot of different ways. To me, what it means is I recognize the fact that costs are more tomorrow than they are today. I recognize the fact that things break, particularly when you're growing and you have a city that's over 200 years old with infrastructure that is over 150 years old, over 100 years old. We have a responsibility to fix these things. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be accountable for the money that we're using as a department. I know for a fact we don't measure anything. We have a $12 million apartment, over 100 employees, and a paper system. And I'm doing quotes around that because people don't understand it. I'm saying at the door, and a lot of folks get it, and they're like, what? Because we all live in worlds where computers collect data, and they inform us on the things that we do. So we're not doing that. So right away, that's a thing that I want to change. But getting back to your question, it's, again, the...
The streets are
what. But yes, thank you. So what I've made a commitment to at the door, and this is something that you'll see on our website this week, because as I say, it's not my job to tell Skip how to do his job. He's had 12 years. I wasn't going to put out policy positions for him to go, oh, I do that too, because he's already doing that. If you get any of his campaign literature, the only things he's responding to are the issues that I've raised. But I'm going to be putting out a 20-year, a 10-year, and a 5-year plan on infrastructure. And again, what I mean by that is a prioritization and understanding of the major system issues that we have, and then also the general maintenance that we need to do on a daily basis or on a monthly basis or a yearly basis. And then you project those costs out. That's how modern cities do their work. On top of that, I'm going to put, get this, guys, a 5-year paving program. So if you live in our city and you know a couple years in advance they're going to pave your road, you as a neighborhood can get together and say, because where I live, okay, I live on Lake Avenue. I've lived in my house for over 20 years. Never been paved in my lifetime. But if you go down my section of Lake Avenue, you can see all these cuts in the road. And the reason that is your wastewater pipes, if your house is built in the 1800s like mine is, it's clay. Trees are going to ruin that. Your potable water line is probably galvanized. That's going to corrode, close up, and you're going to have to replace that. It's very expensive. It cost me like $16,000 to do my wastewater line. And the water line itself is probably a $10,000 project for any homeowner. So if your whole neighborhood could bundle that work together and the city has opened the road, it will never be less expensive. And that's like, you know, that's a service. Yeah. We're giving you knowledge. We're giving you information. And we're coinciding with our subgrade work with the work that we're going to do on our roads. So we're not digging up a street we paved 2 years ago. Gilbert Road's been paved twice in the last six years for no reason.
Well,
there's no reason or logic behind the road paving schedule. They announced during track season they were paving roads and in around the track area during the track season.
Oh, sure.
It's insane.
I was taken to task by the commissioner's wife when I, several friends of mine.
I'm sorry, who?
The person
who. The spokesman for DPW.
The person
Mark Scirocco?
Yeah.
His wife.
Okay.
I had put some comments that friends of mine who come into Saratoga every day and said that the roads are a detriment to a city like Saratoga.
It's atrocious.
And I said, yeah, the entrance to the city going down to Broadway, so that'd be Washington Street, is atrocious, as are almost every street in the city. And she said, well, you know that from Rowland to Roma's Pizza is the state. We have nothing to do with that. Well, if you look now, the state did those roads over on 29, and they look good. And then when you hit past Roma's, the streets turn into a disaster zone again.
The patchwork quilt.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that shows you that our streets need to be done over. And I mean, you can't do them all at once. But to mention the fact that streets are done over many times,
it depends on who you are.
Well,
if you complain, you get service.
They put
it's not preconditioned.
They put a new development on Geyser Road, Bog Meadow, The road was paved. Now, that's not an old development, okay? It was just repaved again this year. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the paving. And I go to your point. It depends who you are.
And I'm going to say something that's going to get the two of you guys really excited, because some people have tried to cast me as the quote-unquote tax man. And listen, I'm a homeowner. I pay taxes. My attitude is much more about I'm a member of our community and a member of our society, and I have no problem paying taxes. What I do care about is how they're used. And so though I may be a liberal person by nature, I'm fiscally conservative in what my expectations are for my government and how efficient it can be. And so when I'm in office, and that's going to happen on January 1st, I'm going to be accountable for every penny that we spend. We don't have the ability to measure our work right now. I'm going to be putting in systems for accountability so that I know where every dollar is spent. I'm accountable to the community for what services we're delivering, and I will never ask for a penny until I can account for every other penny that we've already collected.
Okay.
How about that?
Dylan, that's great. I got one quick question for you. If we just talked about
the... Am I a Democrat?
We just talked the $1.2 million annual loss because of the connection fees, $1.2 million. And that's just a guess based on what budget...
Listen, I was saying well more than $4 million over the last 6 years. So, again, well, I'm trying to be conservative, but you're absolutely right. Because if you look, just for an example, if you look at the apartment complex without looking at the nature of why that's being built, or perhaps... a pilot program where we're trying to put housing in place to help folks with a lower revenue. So I'm not talking about any of those elements, but just looking at it's a 300 apartment development. That's $600,000 that we would have gotten under the old fee structure. $600,000 for that one thing. So look around town, and since 2014, tell me, how many places just like that are here that we didn't collect money from? So that's where I'm coming from.
I didn't even know that number when I was doing my rough math. Yeah. I just went over old budgets to see what income we were calculating.
Yeah.
And it averages $1.2
million. Well, we used to get, and also I would love to say this one thing, because you brought up a name that I don't think gets enough credit. You brought up Ken Klotz. You know, we shouldn't get elected to office to make easy decisions. We need to be contemplative and quite honestly, however meager you may say the pay is or not, I'm not doing this for pay.
Oh, of course not.
But I'm doing this to help the community make the right decisions. And Ken Klotz made a very, very, very brave decision a number of years ago that was highly controversial. And as soon as it happened, nobody ever talked about it again. And it's this. He chose to put our city, our community, on a different path. And what he did is we removed ourselves from the county tax formula as it relates to sales tax. We were getting underpaid. He knew it. He believed in our city, and he put us on a different path. And what that's meant for our community in terms of revenue has been significant. Every year we get more sales tax than we did the year before. So when you're trying to balance your budget, and you get money every year that you weren't budgeting just because it happens, when you're growing and we're building houses, and there's sales tax, there's taxes on the materials that are bought for those structures, and then ultimately they're paying property taxes. For the last 10 years, our base has been expanding. We've collected more money. It's very, very, very easy to balance the books. But I'm going to offer this. We have a tax cap in this state of 2%, and it's totally responsible. It's saying don't go blow your budget out. But to not raise your taxes while our base is expanding, while we're growing, is irresponsible. If we raise our taxes 1/8% or 1/4% as we're growing, we would have a lot of money to address some of the things that I'm concerned about.
Well, you know, as you talk about money, there's two numbers here. The $1.2 million that we, again, annual hookup fees, but more importantly, the $750,000, again, these are DPW issues, correct, not the rest of the, I still think there's plenty of other things, which we'll talk about in a second. $1.2 million worth of uncollected hookup
lost
fees.
Lost revenue.
Lost revenue. And then $750,000 of lost water. Correct. So you're talking about two, just on the surface, $2 million just into the DPW budget that could help.
The water budget, not even the DPW budget, but money that would be, because of state law, directed specifically to address infrastructure. So,
And I talked to guys, I have friends in Wilton on the planning board, and they were trying to buy water from Saratoga Springs, trying to buy water.
Don't ask me.
I think there's a 30% markup when water is being sold to Wilton, and then Scirocco never returned the phone calls.
Well, I probably wouldn't sell water either, and it's specifically for this reason. We don't know how much water we have left. We don't know how much water we can safely produce. As I said before, we haven't had a safe yield test since 1988 when I was in high school. I've learned a lot since then till now. And one of the things that I have definitely learned is you don't make decisions on how much you have to give until you know how much you have to give. We don't do that. We don't measure a bottom line on our performance. You don't know how you can improve unless you're measuring yourself to begin with. So anytime the current commissioner says we've improved this or proved that, it's a lie. It's just a straight-up lie.
I don't believe a word he says based on the water report. I read that last night. I said, this is a bold-faced lie.
We need to control our future as it pertains to water. Mm-hmm. That means investing in our water system. That means controlling our future so that we're not beholden to the county system. And just at that point in time, they're going to implement fees on us, and we as elected officials don't have any role mm-hmm. in affecting that. And so it will just be a cost increase on our citizens. And much like Skip's, it's been a topic of conversation, the fact that I showed a video from the debate where Skip says it's not my responsibility to treat my water appropriately. You can just get a filter if you don't like it. Mm-hmm. That's a patent tax on everybody. So if you look at like a Pure filter that you can buy at Walmart or Target or whatever, $40-$50 a piece, and then you have to change the filters out. So we all buy it from two different places. That would be $100 a household, and at that $9,680, that's $1 million a year tax on our community.
Plus filters,
exactly.
I want to wrap this up with an opinion from you. It's hard not being on the council right now, but you're going to have to work with four other people. We've had two things that I've been trying to get passed for years, and one is buying property for our Code Blue, which we're not going to buy. We're going to lease, which won't be open until, in December. And these are only political ploys. The second one is our EMS station on the east side. We're going to be spending $6 million on a new building on leased property from NYRA. NYRA gave...
Tentatively.
NYRA gave our mayor a $1,000 donation. what's your feeling on... Now, this would be in working with the rest of the council. What's your feeling on building such a structure on leased property?
Well, a couple things. First off, you're absolutely right. I can't control who's in the rest of these offices. And the commitments that I've made to folks at the door, and I make them to you, and I'll make them over the air now. I'm a professional. For my entire career, I've brought disparate parties together to make deals happen. There is a way to transact and work together that's respectful, recognizes people's disparate opinions, but at the same time does the work of the people. So I'm confident that unlike, really, like I said before, I'm experienced and I have the formal education to make the right decisions in this office. I also have the experience to know how to make deals. And so I can work with anybody that the city chooses to elect and put on the city council. I'm confident of that. And then the other piece was, what was that, Rick?
What would you feel about leasing property instead of buying property, spending that amount of money?
A couple things. As it relates to the east side fire station or Code Blue, my personal feeling based on these, again, press stories that are coming out, these tentative deals, these short-term solutions. I'm not a guy that goes to check boxes. I'm somebody that solves problems. Mm-hmm. And so short-term solutions are expedient and they're self-serving. Mm-hmm. You have never heard me talk about homelessness as a political issue. There are people who are out pretending to be homeless in our community. I find that patently offensive. You're dealing in exploitation of human misery for political gain. Mm-hmm. I know, and I have people in my life that have been and have fallen into homelessness. This will never be a political issue for me. This is a personal issue for me. You won't hear me talk about it in this campaign because it's exploitive and it's wrong. We owe our community a solution for this problem because we created it. Gentrification in and of itself creates homelessness. So that's one issue. And then again, as it relates to the EMS, I thought we were supposed to be on the other side of the Northway. And I'm curious how, if nail guns affect the horses on the Oklahoma track, and they do, so the development is impacting them, how are they going to react to sirens?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And how, what's our response time going to be between July and August from Henning Road, or Wyble, excuse me, to the Eastern Plateau between the hours of 12:30 and 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
The trucks are not going to be able to get out of there. Well, it doesn't see, again, check the box, not solve the problem.
They already passed a law. You can't do any kind of lawn mowing or construction on during the day because of the Oklahoma track.
Yeah.
So on Fifth Avenue, you can't even mow your lawn. I think it's before 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, here you could have a fire going out at 8 in the morning, and you got a bunch of horses on the
Oklahoma track.
Cars all over the road trying to park and into the track. Yeah. Like,
and imagine what the other aspect of it is.
Are we going to put it at the Big Red Spring?
It's going to be a rotation here. So, in other words, so if the one that we know of on the east side is busy, the second one is going to come in from the track through the basically through the track properties,
sure,
you know, on both sides with sirens blasting, with the ambulance in tow during the busiest season in that section. I don't think that's the right location. I think it's political in nature. I think these guys have done that. But we could go on and on. This has been so enjoyable, Dylan.
And guys, now, I really appreciate being
with
you.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate for bringing these kinds of facts and figures to us that we can help our listeners make
get
some
educated
decisions.
Get used to it, Saratoga.
Yeah.
I'm going to be your voice on the city council.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dylan. And we'll be back next Saturday. And stay with us.